Golf Smarter number 150 for October 28, 2008.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
PGA Champion Tour players Lauren Roberts and Jim Thorpe.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week we tap the best minds in golf to help lower your scores with tips, drills, insights, and advice. In conversation with course pros, architects, authors, players, teaching gurus, and coaches, here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for listening to another conversation on the Golf Smarter podcast. We encourage you to subscribe so that you don't miss a single show. If you prefer to listen while sitting on your computer, let us remind you about Bunkershot.com. They provide a wealth of great content for golfers, and now they've dedicated a channel to the Golf Smarter podcast where you can listen to each and every episode without subscribing or leaving their site. Bunkershot.com for golf news, features, and more. Good friends. Stay tuned for an announcement about our newest venture, too, after the interviews. Only 1 week left to vote for the People's Choice Podcast Awards. Taking care of some business here, but remember, you can vote once per day. Again, we're in the finals in four different categories, and if you think that we're worthy of your vote, we would appreciate you following these suggestions on how to vote at podcastawards.com. Golf Smarter Tips for the People's Choice Award, Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf for the Best Produced Podcast. In the general category, please vote for Good Dog Podcast. And in sports, we both Golf Smarter Tips and Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf are in the finals. So to be honest, we're trying to get our contract renewed with Edwin Watts Golf, so I'm hoping that this award would have an impact on their decision. So please vote for Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf in the sports category. Again, you can vote once every 24 hours at podcastawards.com. We have two guests today. Recently, I was invited to Media Day for the Charles Schwab Cup Championship at Sonoma Golf Course. There was a press conference that really didn't offer anything out of the ordinary, but afterwards, I did get some one-on-one time with both Jim Thorpe, who won the event last year, and Lauren Roberts, who won the Champions Tour Schwab Cup 2007. Both men have been playing on the Champions Tour and the PGA Tour for many years, and it was my goal to talk about things other than how they're going to play this course or how much money they've earned on the tour. We start with Jim Thorpe, and we'll segue directly into Lauren Roberts, and I'm sure you'll notice a difference in their voices. Through the beauty of digital recordings, we now welcome Jim Thorpe to the Golf Smarter podcast.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thank you, guys.
Listen, you grew up in a big family, but you grew up on a golf course.
Yeah, my dad was a greenskeeper at the Roxborough Country Club, just outside of Raleigh, North Carolina, for 55 years. So my brothers and sisters, seven girls and five boys, we grew up on the eighth hole of the golf course, and it was a lot of fun, man.
So you must look at a golf course differently than most golfers. I mean, there's a lot of players who come out that are the children of players and children of coaches.
That's right.
But as the son of a greenskeeper, of a superintendent, you must see a golf course much differently than everybody else.
Yes, I do. I'm one of those guys that walk down the fairway. I pull up a weed that sticked up in the fairway or something, a little crabgrass or something. I pull that up out of the ground. That's stuff we did growing up as kids from dad's orders. Or you replace a divot. And golf courses, I think, are magnificent. I don't care if it's sand trap, water, tree line. I think all golf courses, when they build the golf courses, they come in and put the hard work and effort in there. Then it's up to us to keep the beauty of the golf course there. And that's kind of the way I look at a golf course. That's one of the things I love about the Sonoma Golf and Country Club here in Sonoma. The golf course is so well manicured, man. So it just kind of frees you up to go out there and enjoy the breeze and the trees and listen to the birds sing and just go out there and have a wonderful round of golf.
One of my all-time favorite lines is from a movie called Garden State, and Alan King's looking out at a golf course, and he said, golf, nature on a leash.
That's exactly what it is, nature on a leash. It's just absolutely beautiful what they can do to a golf course, what they can do. You know, it's amazing. You can walk in Connecticut, Foxwoods Resort Casino. There's a golf course. We built two golf courses called Lake of Isles. It was an old Boy Scout camp, about, I don't know, 1,400, 1,500 acres of land. and Reese Jones Jr. come in there, and they look at this piece of land. They says, okay, we can do two golf courses here. Then they start their routing process. Then they start knocking a tree down here, cutting a tree down there, putting a road in here, putting a sand trap in there, routing the fairways and all that sort of stuff, utilizing the lakes, and you see the wildlife flying in. And it's just, I tell you what, it is nature unleashed. And it's absolutely magnificent, man. You know.
So as the son of a superintendent, strategically, mm-hmm. how do you see a golf course differently than most other players?
I think I look at a golf course different because of the fact that I grew up on a golf course. I've seen what went into the making of a golf course. I know what it takes to build a sand trap. I know what it takes to build a green. You know, it's like when you're out there, you're playing with a person that misses a putt and he takes his putt and bangs it into the green or something of that nature. And I'm saying to myself in my mind, if he only knew what went into the building of that green, the making of that green. You dig it down about 2 feet, you put your gravel, you put your pipelines for your drainage, then you put your stone, and you come back with your sand, and then you come back with this 6 to 8 inches of dirt, and then you put your seed down. It costs a lot of money. And when you damage a green or something like that, which nature would make it recover, but it takes time. And so when I look at a golf course, I look at the imagination that went into the golf course. You know, what was this guy thinking when he says, I'm going to make this adult leg 440 yards of the adult leg right. I'm going to bring the lake into play. I'm going to slope the fairway toward the lake so we get the drainage when the rain comes, it would drain off into the lake and that sort of stuff. So, you know, I remember years ago when we had to create lakes on a golf course. When there was man-built lakes, and I watched my dad and the crew go out there and stock the lake with brim or bass or fish or something of that nature, and then you see the little cacti weeds come up around the lake, and they would bloom and give it that nature look like this was here when we got here. And so I see all of those things. I know what conditions, what a dry spell can do to a golf course, what it can do when you overwater a golf course. I know leaving one golf course, going to another golf course, you can on the bottom of your shoes or on your golf club, you can transfer some type of weed or some type of grass. And I'll never forget when I lived in Buffalo, New York, I used to play a golf course called Craigburn. And Craigburn, to me, had most beautiful luxury fairways you ever seen. And I would take up these massive divots with my wedges while I was playing golf out there, and we'd fill the divots with sand. But I would put the divots on my golf cart, take them home, and scratch out a place in the yard and put that divot down. And after about 8-9 years, my yard started looking like a fairway. And people said, man, what'd you do to the yard? And I was too ashamed to tell them I broke the divots in from the golf course. But, you know, when you look at a golf course, you see nature unleashed. And also you see the beauty. You see the hard work and the labor, everything that goes into it. A lot of people don't understand why a person would pay $100,000 to join a golf course. But when you find a golf course, just a magnificent golf course, the layout, the scenery, and a beautiful clubhouse, you can sit out back and smoke a cigar, have a little shot of wine or brandy or something of that nature. And you just sit there and wonder, you know, what was they thinking when they said, I'm going to build a golf course here? What was they thinking when they said, we're going to route this golf course down through nature, and we're going to leave this area here for the birds and the wildlife, and, you know, we can't test this area over here, but we can do this. It's mind-boggling. And then late in the year, especially during the fall of the year, when you have courses in the Northeast where the trees start to bloom and change colors, and, you know, the autumn days, the leaves are blowing and kind of fluttering to the ground, and you see a deer walk across, you know what I mean? You see a raccoon or something of that nature. It takes you to a place that you like to just live there. And, you know, so, I mean, it's a magnificent thing, you know. Whoever created the idea of the game of golf, that I'm going to build these golf courses. And you take the greatest architects of the world, the Jack Nicklauses and the Graham Marshes and the Pete Dye, the Robert Trent Jones, and so many great architects there that have that vision and that can go out and cut a pass down through the trees or fly over in the helicopter and take pictures and take it back to the office and say, okay, we can run it this way, cut back this way, the cart pass to go that way. We got to use the water there, leave the slope in there. I mean, to me, that is magnificent. That takes a lot of creativity, man. And to have grown up to be a part of this. You know, my dad spent 55 years. The good thing about it, you know, I look at them now, you know, they have the ride mowers. Well, we push mowers. You have the tractors and the golf carts and all that. So there was no such thing. I mean, when we started back in the days getting golf carts back in the mid-50s and that sort of stuff, man, we was really making progress. And I'll never forget, as a very, very young man, out by the, let's just call it the utility shed where we kept all the mowers and the tractors and that sort of stuff, off on the side by a light pole there, I built a little green about as big as 4 or 5 golf carts parked together. I bet, you know, kind of stole some seeds out of this shed and that sort of stuff, and went over and you get the rich black dirt, and you try to do the same thing they did when they build a green from scratch. And about 2 years later, I had one of the best greens in the whole state, man. But you know, my dad would say, okay, it's time to verticut that little green, or it's time to spike that little green and put a cover, put a coating of sand on that green. And those are things that you learn. Even today at my home in Florida, where I live, my daughters always come out and say, Dad, why are you working the yard so hard? Well, I grew up doing that sort of stuff, you know what I mean? So I like to see the beauty of the grass, how it so evenly grows and that sort of stuff. And every now and then you see a patch of crabgrass. I don't know where it blows in from, maybe from a bird dropping or something of that nature. And you go out there and you cut around and you dig it out by the roots and stuff. And crabgrass will grow anywhere. And then you go back a week later and you notice how nature has covered that spot. And you know what? That's, to me, that's the beauty. That is the real beauty of it. You know what I mean? And from a plan standpoint, a golfing standpoint, we weren't allowed to play on the golf course every day, even though we lived on it and my dad was a greenskeeper. But we understood that because Pop would explain it to us. But when it came, our caddy days, our days, we could play and that sort of stuff. Then later on, things changed and opened up. It became more beautiful. It felt like we was a part of a creation that my dad had helped create it. And it's been a love for me. And to me, it's the greatest game in the world. And if you notice, in golf, I don't care what sports you play, professional baseball, football, run track, whatever the number may be, basketball, when your career is over, the first thing you do is go find a set of golf clubs. You want to go out there and attack nature. And, you know, I'm looking up here on the left, on the ninth hole here, what the guy's doing. They got a coating of sand on the green, and you got about 8-10 guys working there. I remember seeing my dad do that sort of stuff by himself. You know, he would drive the tractor over, and we'd load it with a coating of sand, and we would go hit golf balls and that sort of stuff. He'd go out there and shove it himself and throw it around, and we had what you call a dragger. You drag it across the green, and it would thin the sand out and what would sink into the turf and stuff. And it was absolutely fantastic, man, and I think that's one of the reasons that golf would be a part of my life until the day I die.
As this, now you understand that most golfers don't get to play on $100,000 a year courses, and
nope.
they play on weekends at best, maybe 2-3 times.
That's
if they
right.
really get a lot of time
to
play. If here you are, the son of a superintendent who ended up being a professional golfer, but you have an opportunity to give advice to the common man, the common player out there about greenskeeping, about the love of a golf course, what kind of advice would you give them about from the son of a superintendent?
From the son of a superintendent, I would say to the golfers out there and those people that play golf who love the game as much as I love it, treat the golf course like it's your little baby. You know what I mean? Make sure she's got plenty of water. Make sure you don't drive your golf carts in the wrong place. And don't make it when a big rain comes, make sure you don't drive the golf carts in a low spot. Don't beat up the greens. Prepare ball marks. Nothing can imagine if you can imagine what the beauty of a golf course is. You know, when you sit there and you look across the sloping and the rolling hills, and all the grass is cut to the same level, and you see a patch of birds fly over, and they're singing, they're happy. The sand traps are shaped and they're well manicured. The tees. You know what I mean? You don't hit a bad tee shot and stick your driver down in the tee because the tee hasn't done nothing to create that. It's all about the swing you put on the golf shop. If you can visualize these things, if you really love nature and love what man has created and what nature has blessed us with, then you wouldn't go out there and do things to destroy that. I remember years ago that my dad's little golf course there, Roxburgh Country Club, we're getting ready for the member guest. The golf course was in such great condition. And somebody just out of the blue, probably some kid or somebody had too much to drink, drove his car across the golf course, spinning the tires all around, crossed the green, through the sand trap, and you come out the next door, this beautiful golf course that you worked on for months, getting ready for the member guests, and something like this happened. It's a real smack in the face. Like somebody just kind of pulled the plug out of your ab machine, and you go, God, what happened? You know what I mean? But if you love the game, just take care of it. You know, you replace your divots and put a little sand on that divot where nature would take over and let it grow back. Don't go out there and do nothing stupid to the green, such as banging them around or kicking with your feet and that sort of stuff. And just go out there and enjoy what man has created and what nature has blessed us with. And I tell you what, it will improve your golf game also.
Golf is so unique, especially professional golf, compared to every other sport, because here you are, you're going to be 60 soon. Happy birthday in February.
Thank you.
And you're competing professionally.
Isn't that great, man?
Isn't that amazing?
It's amazing because, you know,
you played football in college.
Played football in college.
You played PGA Tour.
PGA Tour.
And here you are at the best part of your game.
Yeah.
And you're... I mean, there's no other opportunity to be able to compete at 60 years old and success like this.
No, you know what? Life for me started at age 50. I'm telling you, I mean, I had a good run out there. It was great, a wonderful wife and family. But life would have started at age 60. At age 50, I was able to give them the things that I never thought I would be able to give them. And probably the most enjoyment, people ask you, why do you play golf for a living or what caused you to play golf for a living? To me, it was a way of supporting your family and making a good living. But to travel from North Carolina to California, from California to Arizona, from Arizona to Hawaii, and you see these magnificent golf courses that has been laid out that, man add a little water to, add a little seed to, a little fertilizer to, then he manicures it and nature takes over from that. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, just you stop and think about it.
You really are the son of a superintendent, aren't you?
Man,
everything comes back to the golf, the green.
I love it. I honestly, I love it. It's something that you close your eyes that you see. I never forget, at home, the first thing I do in the morning, I jump up in the morning. We live probably 150 yards off our golf course. I jump up in the morning, put my shorts on, my tennis shoes. I don't jog anymore. I just walk across the golf course. And, you look at the dew on the golf course, the beautiful flowers, the trees are blooming. It's just a sight to behold. And if you love the game, if you love nature, then you can never do anything to destroy a golf course.
At the age of 60, I got to believe that you're feeling more aches and pains than you did when you were playing. Football, I'm sure you had your weeks where there were aches and pains, but those things went away. Now, these injuries, these things, we're all at an age now where these pains linger a little longer. And you're still able to compete. Can you give us some advice on how, without the performance-enhancing drugs, how you stay in such great shape and are able to beat that?
Basically, what you do to stay in the great shape. First of all, golf is much stretch. To me, that's the key to longevity. Stretching those muscles, stretching those hamstrings, stretching that back, keeping yourself in good shape, watching what you eat, watching what you drink. Those are the things you have to be very, very careful with. Because as a golfer, you have what you call a bad eating habit. You kind of eat on a run quite a bit. So if you just grab a piece of fruit, put a piece of fruit in the golf bag, that sort of stuff, when you get hungry, leave the sugars alone. Just eat a piece of natural fruit or something of that nature. Drink a lot of water on the golf course because you can become dehydrated. And just pay attention to your health, Just don't jump out of the car and run to the first tee and start hitting. You need to stretch the hamstring, stretch the back out. Put a club between the arms and do some twisting and stretch those muscles out there to the point that it hurts a little bit. And you know what? Just basically watch what you eat, man. I tell you what, very, very seldom I eat anything after 6:30 or 7 o'clock at night. I might eat a snack or something, but I won't eat nothing heavy and lay down with it. That's the wonderful thing about this wonderful game that we play.
But do you have a regular workout regimen that you do when you're not playing?
Yeah, every day. Every day I do a little stretching, just a little bending. Nothing major. I don't, you know, like you said, I'll be 60 in February now. But I still do a little something, a little bending, a little stretching, that sort of stuff, even the days I don't play. And I tell you what, during the course of a year, there's only about 8-9 days I don't play. So, you know what?
Lucky man.
I'm very, very lucky, man. But at eight, even at age 16, I feel that my game is as good as it has ever been. I've been blessed. I mean, a few aches and pains. I had a few aches and pains this year where I didn't perform as well as I wanted to. But you know what? That's all a part of the cycle that we live. You know, it's like I was telling somebody earlier today, was talking, well, Jim, you're 39th on the money list. Can you get back to the Schwab Championship? Of course, I believe I can get back. You know what I mean? Most people had the back problem or the knee problem I had this year probably would have called it quits for the year. But, you know, I love the game. I enjoy being out here. I mean, this is fantastic. You know, I could just pitch up camp here on Sonoma Golf Club and just this. Hey, yeah, this is where I live, you know. But even at age 60, you can still come out and compete and do these things and make more money than we ever dreamed of making. So that's the fantastic thing about it. And not just to make the money, but we give so much back. You know, I mean, you have a chance to give back to the Boys and Girls Club, have a chance to give back to the First Tee program, you have a chance to give back to the community, you have a chance to meet Gary Player, made one of the greatest statesmen that I've ever heard in life. He says, you know, I never judge my worth by the money that I have made, you know, from endorsements and golf. He says, I judge my worth about the friends, the people I have met. As I travel around this beautiful globe playing a game that I love. And I just like to add that I am more than a millionaire because I have met so many wonderful people. I play golf with so many people that wouldn't have came into my life unless it was golf. So I'm a very rich man. And you know what? That is, I totally agree to that. To be able to go and play the most beautiful venues in the world, meet some of the greatest people in the world, play golf with president, dine with kings and queens. Man, we've been blessed.
Go on forever, but man, I think you just ended it right there. We ended it right there. That
perfect,
Jim,
man. Thank you so much, man.
Best of luck in the tour this year.
Hey, it's gonna be great, man.
And
you know what? Listen,
another victory in the championship, huh?
Another victory. You know what? I'm one of those guys. If it happened, I've been blessed again. If it don't happen, I've been blessed anyway. So you know, I got no complaints.
And welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast.
Thank you.
Golf Smarter TV.
Yeah.
You know, I read that you would, if you had your druthers or if any other thing, you would have been a golf pro. You'd be teaching.
Well, I was. That's when I started out. I got into golf and I worked in the bag room at the local country club to be able to have a place to practice and pick the range and did all that kind of stuff. And when I left college, I ended up being the assistant pro out there and was doing my apprenticeship. And that's what I was going to be. I was going to be a club professional, you know, and teach and run programs at a golf course. And I ended up having a gentleman who was my coach for a long time by the name of Jim Swaggerty. And he told me, you need to try to play, because if you end up teaching the game, you're going to ultimately teach through your game. So you need to develop as a player and just see, give yourself a shot. You'll always kick yourself if you never try. And so I went to the qualifying school and I made it. So it took me 3 tries, but I went and I made it. And so I ended up being a player instead of a club professional. But you never know. I may retire and go back that direction when I get older. Because I just
do you like to teach?
I love being around golf. I just love being around golf.
And so for it's an interesting that you said to learn how to play. And it seems like a lot of instructors today are teaching golf swings, how to make contact with the ball. But are they teaching how to play golf? Are these two different things?
Yeah, it's all part of the same thing. I mean, you need to learn how to hit the ball correctly, all right? And there's so many different ways to swing the golf club. You know, your body type determines kind of how you swing. I mean, nobody else can really swing like Tiger Woods. I mean, you kind of have what's kind of your, what's in you, what's just part of your swing, but you can refine it and learn how to use that and get the most out of it. You can't take a young kid, give him the top flight instruction or the best instruction and give him the best set of clubs and turn him into a Tiger Woods. You don't know that that's going to happen. You know, not everybody can be a Tiger Woods. So you have to go out and get the most out of what you can do. And if it turns out to be a great player, then that's fine. But still enjoy the game. But there's so many different ways to go about learning how to play, and there's so many different parts about the game, you know, from chipping to short game to how to play the golf course to how to take advantage of what you do best and that sort of thing. And I think if you look at all the players that have had success maybe playing the game professionally, or anybody, even good amateur players, they generally do one thing about their game better than something else. They usually will have something that they're really good at, whether they're good drivers, whether they're good putters, whether they're good, maybe they're really good with a 7-iron or really good with a 5-wood. Even the average guy that goes out and has fun has one club in his bag that if he has to have a shot to beat his buddy out of $5, he'll go to that golf club. So you have to learn how to play to your strengths, and that's all about what teaching how to play the game is.
Okay. And what about the mental aspect of the game? Now, here you are competing in your 50s, mm-hmm. and there's kids who are coming up on the tour now that may not have the mental aspect of the game, and they're not succeeding. Is that a big part of the game? Is the, you know, are you able to refine that more as an adult, as a mature adult now?
It's a huge part of the game. You don't know what your maturity development rate is going to be. You know, I look at my career, and I think I started playing the tour when I was 25, 26 years old. I didn't win for the first 13 years I played the tour. Now, I had some success. I went out there, and I was able to feed my family and make some money, and it was economically feasible for me to continue to play. But I didn't win for the first 12 and a half, 13 years. I started playing in 1981 was my first year. I finally won at Bay Hill in 1994. So I look at myself and say, well, okay, maybe I'm a late bloomer. I've had a nice career on the Champions Tour, had a nice career later in my life on the regular tour, got some wins, but it took me 13 years to get there. So I wish you could impart the knowledge that I know now. I wish I'd had that knowledge when I was 28, 29, 30 years old. It took me longer to get it. Now, some guys get it at a very early age. It depends on what your maturation rate is for when you develop understanding how to control your emotions, how to play what works best for you, how to take advantage of your strengths. You never know when it's going to kick in.
So do you think that's part of the crash and burn that's happening with a lot of these young phenoms that are coming up in the game?
I think it is. That's a good tool. You have to crash and burn a few times to do it. And, you know, you see young guys, and we're so starved for guys that will come out and win repeatedly. And there's always that talk about there's not enough players that are in their 20s that are winning on the PGA Tour. We have a lot of foreign players, but there's not enough young American players that are winning in their 20s. Well, you got to crash and burn, and it's a cyclical thing. And I think you're going to see more younger players come up that are going to get through that at an earlier age and get winning again. But it is, you got to get out there and go through the fire a few times.
I received an email from one of our listeners, and I think this is a really valid question that I'd love to get your opinion on and your advice. If you have a limited amount of time to play, which most golfers do,
right. Unlike
professionals who, that's their job, if you have a limited amount of time to play, and we're talking about a limited amount of time, we'll get to a limited amount of money in a minute,
mm-hmm.
Lessons, playing, or practice, what should they be spending more of their time doing?
Well, I think they should spend more of their time practicing and then playing, but I think you should spend about equal times of both. Lessons are not a huge thing. I think if a golf professional is really a good golf professional and he works at a golf course, whether it's a municipal course or a public golf course or a private course, should just be out there. It doesn't take much to understand how to stand to the ball, how to hold the ball. Once you show somebody that, let them go out and have fun, because you're involved in the game because you enjoy it and it's fun. And it's not going to be fun standing out on the lesson tee three times a week, an hour at a time, trying to play the game. You need to go out there and just get a club and a ball and start chipping it around a practice green somewhere. Just start chipping it around your backyard, trying to make the ball, you know, chip it over the bird bath into the gutter, stuff like that. That's what you need to do. That's the fun part about the game. And then you go out and play, because it's no fun to just stand there and take lessons all the time and hit practice balls. That is part of learning the game, but ultimately you're doing it because you want to play the course, and that's what you need to do. You need to go out and you need to hit practice balls, have fun trying different kinds of shots, and then go out and play. And you don't have to play 18 holes. Go out and play 9 holes later in the evening. Go out and play later.
Or 6 and 12. I mean, what if courses right. were to change it to make, instead of 9 holes, do 3 rounds of 6? Because maybe you only have an hour and a half to play.
Right. I think time constraints now, if you look at our society now from what it was 30 years ago, and I especially see it in the young kids coming up. I mean, they want to do something for an hour and move on to something else. If we could get golf down from 4.5 to 5 hours to maybe a couple hours, 2.5 hours, go play 9 holes. Make it a 9-hole game. And charge accordingly so that you're not spending $80, $90, $100 to play. We got to get back to where it's just – it can't be just an open field, but let's have a golf course that's $15-$20 to play, got a couple of bunkers on it, a tee and a green, and there you go. You just go out and hit it. It doesn't have to be perfect.
More power to you. Yeah. All right, so now we go with limited amount of funds. Mm-hmm. Now the question is, should they spend it on playing, lessons, or equipment?
They need to spend it on playing. You know, equipment is nice, but when you're first starting out or you're first getting into the game, you don't know what equipment's going to work best for you. So an old set of clubs with some steel shafts, you don't need graphite, you don't need this, you don't need that, okay? You can get a very reasonable set of golf clubs at the swap meet. I'm telling you, you can go to the swap meet and just see what's out there. As long as it's, you know, a good steel shaft and it doesn't have to be forging or a cast. It can be anything like that. But just so that you can get a set of clubs and even go out. I'd love to see kids start with just a set of 3, 5, 7, 9 wedge, you know, a 3-wood and a putter or a driver and a putter. I mean, learn to play the game with half a set. You don't have to invest much money at all to get a set to get out there and play. And if you're younger and you're playing with a half a set, you'll learn to hit a lot of those in-between shots, and that helps you develop your feel.
As a golfer, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Well, now you – boy, I'm going to think about that.
So,
you know
– as a golfer, not a golf teacher, not a golf professional, but as a golfer –
you know, my first coach, Jim Swaggerty, told me, and obviously this is coming from a professional background, and then I'm looking at making it a career. He gave me a piece of advice. He said, you know, when you come back, you go out and you play the tour for a month, and you come back home, and I watch you swing. I said, I want you to come back home and swing like Oren Roberts. Don't come back home and be trying to swing like somebody else. And that was the best piece of advice I've got for my career, is that hopefully my swing really hasn't changed that much over the years. I've just gotten better at repeating it. And that was the best piece of advice I got. Go out and kind of be yourself on the golf course and enjoy it.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Best of luck on the tour this year, and we really appreciate your time. And stay in shape, right?
That's
it's
right.
Hardest thing to do for our guys our age now. We're the same age, a couple weeks apart.
You got to do it. And I heard a question earlier. When you get older and you start losing the game, why do you think maybe you don't get it play as well as you did down the crunch? Well, you know, if you're in good physical shape, you don't get as tired, you're going to think better.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Lauren, thanks so much.
All right, good.
Appreciate
thanks.
It.
You got it. Thank
Great.
You.
The Schwab Cup Championship can be seen on the Golf Channel from October 30th to November 2nd, 2008, and we wish them both a lot of luck. Now, here's something that we're pretty excited about, and hopefully you will enjoy it as well. This is the official announcement for the launch of Golf Smarter TV. We're not sure exactly what form it's going to take in the future. Like most everything else, we'll let it evolve as we receive feedback from you. Now, my feeling is that the Golf Channel and some other video podcasts, they provide great videos on shot making. So for now, I'm going to continue focusing on strategy, tips, interviews, and insights. Go with what got you there, right? So our thoughts are to give the highlight of the Golf Smarter interview and promote the full interview that's on the podcast. So the first Golf Smarter TV featuring one question with Lauren Roberts can be seen on the Golf Smarter blog at golfsmarter.com. Now, you can also see it on YouTube. It doesn't look as good. Actually, it looks crappy, but it's YouTube, and it's easy for everyone to get to. So just search for Golf Smarter on YouTube, and you'll find a couple different pieces that are produced by Green Creative. It's YouTube. Search for Golf Smarter. Of course, go see it on the Golf Smarter blog. Our group at Facebook.com is growing, and we invite you to join the group and get in the conversation. This week's question about playing a par 5 will also be submitted via video. There are other discussions there, so please join the Golf Smarter group at Facebook.com and participate. Are you a fan of daylight savings time? If you live in an area that is conducive to year-round golf, then like me, you must love daylight savings time. I like playing till 8 o'clock at night, and I'm so sad that we're turning back the clocks and losing the light. Oh well, what are you going to do? The end of October also means time is running out to register to win an autographed copy of Tom Wishon's latest book, The Right Sticks. Deadline for entries is October 31st, and we have 4 copies, autographed copies, to give away. We also have 3 copies of 15-Minute Golf DVD by Lance McWilliams. Deadline for entries on that is November 13th, 2008. Please go to golfsmarter.com and click on the Contest tab to register to win. We close this week with a quote submitted by Vincent Poirier, who's a jet engineer in Arkansas and a golfer as well. He quotes Jack Nicklaus, who once said, "Confidence is the most important single factor in this game, and no matter how great your natural talent, there's only one way to obtain and sustain it. Work." Next week, a listener requests to talk to a great golf instructor, the director of instruction for the Baltimore Country Club, Joe Plecker. If you have any questions, quotes, comments, suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Hi, this is Joanne Green of smarterpodcasts.com. Thanks to you, our loyal listeners, 3 of our regular podcasts are finalists in the 2008 People's Choice Podcast Awards. Winning is based on your participation, and you're allowed to vote once per day. As a discerning podcast listener, we'd appreciate your continued show of support by voting for our programs in these categories: Golf Smarter Tips for People's Choice Award, Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf for both Best Produced and Sports, and the Good Dog Podcast in the General category. Voting takes place daily, October 23rd to November 6th, 2008, at podcastawards.com. Thanks.